You are listening to Grammy's Rocket Chair on RLM Radio.
The girl of your dreams has got to be in some bar.
Sorry, boys and girls, but this is X-rated. So if you're under 18...
Get out, goddammit!
Get the point good.
Enough?
Bend over.
Y'all ready for this?
We do it all night long.
And now, your host, Grammy.
Hey there, hi there, ho there, everybody. And guess what? It is a wacka, wacka, wacka windy Wednesday out here in Grammy land. And I hope it's a wonderful wacky Wednesday for you. Although, I have no control over that. My phone is going off like crazy. My family has got a group text thing going on. And so it's going, da-da-da-dun. Dun, dun, dun. I keep telling everybody I need to change that, and every time I say that, someone says, "No, don't. We like that. That's cool." Oh well, ringtones are fun, even if it's not really a ringtone, just a notifier. And yeah, you are listening to Grammy's Rocket Chair here on RealLibertyMedia.com, Channel 10, also on the RLM Spreaker Channel, the RLM TuneIn Radio Station, the RLM Internet Radio Station, the RLMRadio.xyz site, and I think several other RLM places, because we're invading the world. We're invading your mind. Kind of like that. Meme that I just shared a little bit ago here in the chat that, wow, oh, man. Oh, Vinny, please, let's don't go there. That's just nasty, honey. Hun, if you're that damn desperate, oh, Lord, yeah. Mental Etch-A-Sketch, I really need to perfect that thing. I really do, because once you see something, it cannot be unseen. That's a sad thing about that. Ooh, you might forget it until something else comes along that reminds you of it, and then you go, and that's pretty much what I just did. Okay, over here on Twitter, hey, Gary-el, how you doing, hun? And thank you, Barman, for letting everybody know that I am alive and in poison on this Wackadoodle Wednesday. Over here in realliberty.org, I see Rob Works and Grimner and Bob Renner are over here. And Bobby just quit a couple minutes ago. Dang, Bobby, you're just too fast. That's all there is to it. Bobby has got to be the workingest man I know. He is always working. Jeez, oh, Pete, makes me tired just seeing all of his posts. Okay, over here on Freedom's Network, I see Grimmy is here, and thank you once again, Grim, for letting me know. And I did see that thing that you posted earlier, Cowboy Tech, if you're listening. If you're not, maybe you'll hear it in the podcast. Oh, sweetheart, you know, when it gets to be the beginning of the season to start wearing shorts, wow, I am serious competition for paper. Serious. I mean, I'm not quite paper pasty white. You know, I'm not quite Elmer's glue white, but, and then, you know, as the season wears on and I start getting a little bit more sunshine, then I become like a Neapolitan ice cream kind of thing. But I'll stick with Grammy Cracker because predominantly that's at least the color my legs are. Oh, well. Hi, Estrella, over here on Freedom's Network, that wonderful FM site. And Bob Renner was here for a while, as well as Laid In and Cowboy Tech and Grimmy. And, well, yours truly is here loitering around. What is that? Damn Van Meter. Hey, you damn Van Meter. Damn, girlfriend. It should be Dayum. That's true, Grim. The Grammy family starts when one brother. Although, it is kind of sort of a family trait. And we cannot have a family reunion without having some kind of beans involved. I'm just putting that out there as well. And y'all need to quit saying, fuck Trump. There's your F-bomb for the night so early in the show. Because, seriously, I don't need that mental image either. Because, you know, my mind goes literal. Yeah. Let's not go there, okay? Just not. Okay, over here on Mines. Holy smokes, Derek Richards. Dude, honey, caps locks makes it rather difficult to read sometimes, especially when you do like this great big diatribe of cap locks. Love you, hon, but stop it. What is this? I hate when people won't stop complaining about their BF or GF to me. If you're unhappy, leave. Don't want to? Then work it out and deal with it. I get sick and tired of hearing the same shit every day. Yes, honey, I do too. But you know what? People are bitching all the time. Some, you know, there are some people that just plain ain't happy unless they're bitching. It's a sad fact of life. You know, and, well, there are times when I just have to, you know, get out my litter box and start slinging some shit. Or at least some kitty litter. There's Gary L. over here on Twitter. Yes. Okay. Excuse me. Let's see. I've been to Twitter, been to FM site, been to realliberty.org, been to Minds, and yeah, wow, wow, Derek is shouting. Cap locks! Don't make me go all cap locks. Dude, seriously. Back off! Back off! Let's see, where else do I need to go? Oh, in the Matrix. In the Matrix. What's going on over here? Oh, they're still talking about Epstein. Epstein is just a cog, a teeny tiny little cog, or maybe possibly a spring in the giant mechanism. Seriously, I mean, it's one of those expendable parts. Quite obviously, that in this great big mechanism. Don't see a whole heck of a lot else going on over here. So hi, anybody over here on In the Matrix. And Fakey Book. Yeah, my family's been posting like crazy today, but I really haven't. I've just been kind of sort of looking. The best thing you'll ever do in life is to completely accept who you are and not care what others think of you. Well, yeah, except for, I will put this little bitty exception there. Completely accept yourself for who you are, unless you're like Hannibal Lecter, and then, sweetie, honey, you need to change your diet. I saw something earlier about Japan opened a restaurant that is human meat. Really? Really? Anybody else see that handbasket at night? You can see it at night. It's coming in. It's coming in pretty quick, too. And that's why things are starting to warm up again. Or cool down, depending on if you're a hot hell or a cold hell kind of person. Okay, over here, in the place where you need to be, if you want to give me some static, if you're happy and you know it, rack around. Hey, Miss Kate. No, you're not. Okay, let's see. Over here in RLM, which, by the way, if you're listening in on Spreaker, come on over to reallibertymedia.com. Think of a nickname. Join the chat. Give me some static, and I'll give it back. But don't wait too long, because tonight and Friday is going to be the end of it for a while. I'm not going to say forever, but I will say for a while, because I got things to do. In any case, oh, damn, Rob Works came back with a giant platter of tacos. Dude, it's no wonder I got rumblies in the tumbly. Okay, over here in the RLM right up top, I see Barman, the most splendiferous bot in the whole wide world, closely followed by Beetle! Beetle, I saw you chatting earlier. Was it today? I think it was earlier today. I saw you chitty-chatting, and then the chat got overrun and overtaken, and I got busy. So, hi, Beetle. I see Grimner is in the chitty chat. Hey, Grimmy. Grimmy is the RLM god, don't you know? And he's the poster all over the place. He posts stuff everywhere for all of us on that do the radio to let the world know there's a crazy person on the radio, and they just might have something relevant to say. I'm not promising I will, but there's other shows where they do. I also see the lovely Moose Girl is logged in. Hey, Moose, how you doing? We got some backward bracket DC going on, as well as Anti and some Asmodeus Asmo. Also see Chalcedony in the chit-chat, as well as Echelon. Yours truly is here. IB Don C, or IBDC, is also here. He's got multiple personality thing going on, looks like. Java, 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 Java Doctor 2 is also here. The new millennial bequeathment. Please turn me into a hamburger. Ick. Ick. Yeah, I've touched on a few of those articles, you know, to kind of check them out, see what was going on, and it's like, good Lord, I have absolutely no, that's probably why I've lost 5 pounds in the last week. No, I'm not looking for it either. I dropped it somewhere, and it can just stay there. If you step in it, you're welcome. Moving along, Meister Brower is here. Hey, Meister Brower, how you doing? I also see some Poopster in the chat. Who's the Poopster? Who's the Poopster? You know, my baby sis's nickname is Pooper. Just saying. Are you anything like her? She's a crazy woman. Kate is here, the lovely Miss Kate from down in Florida. Honey, are you getting hammered by the hurricane or himicane? I guess it's a himicane this time because it's a guy's name. Unless Dorian is one of those interchangeable kind of names. I don't know. Cripes, it gets so weird anymore. Rob Wikes is also here. And, yeah, chowing down on tacos, I'll have you know. By gosh and by golly. He's also having some weed. Weed! I've been pulling weeds. Ugh, not the right kind of weed. The lovely Miss Vanna White, the letter turner of the... Well, she's a bot, but I still think of her as a lovely letter turner in the chit-chat. Vinnylicious is here. Vinnylicious. Alrighty then, honey. I don't know who told you you was, but you just go with it, okay? W4DKV is also in the chat, as well as Weatherdork. Hey, Weatherdork, how you doing? It's breezy out here, hon. Did you predict that? Also got some Phantom in the chat. And once again, thank you, young man, for the awesome intro that you did for me. We got Chaskura and Chaskurenus. I'm thinking that's a double poisonality. Double mint, gum kind of thing going on. Some cyborg noodle. May you be touched by the cyborgian noodliness of it all. Damn, Van Meter. Damn, girlfriend. Oh, not yet. Okay, just getting ready to start the watch mode. Okay, that works for me. You be careful, hon. Hunker down. You got a brand new bathroom to hide out in if you need to. I've seen pictures. It's very pretty. Socked it good. Let's see, Ann Siv is also here, as well as Frumpy. Hey, Frumpy, how you doing, hon? Haven't chit-chatted with you for a few days. Gariel is also here. Welcome aboard, Gariel. Long time no see in the chitty chat. How you doing, hon? See you a lot on Twitter and occasionally on Facebook, but nice to see you here. Got some Gooberzilla going on in the chit-chat, as well as Gromit and JJ's, JJ's, that wonderful feller from Scotland. Got some Kiss in the chit-chat. Who's smooching? I hope you're not smooching on that meme I shared earlier. Got some Matt, WJ2002, going on, as well as some Mr. Snick Snack Patty Whack. Give that dog a bone, why don't you? Got some Pondergander, as well as some Pom-pom-pom-pom sauce, and the real Donnie Woo. Sock Puppet is also here, and looky there, we got a Smataz. That's a not-so-intelligent bot. Although sometimes Smataz says stuff that's like, dude, wow, that's kind of deep. After you think about it a while, you just kind of... Yeah. And to round out the crew, the one, the only, the holiest Roger in the world. In the world. Oh, yeah, stock up on chocolate and cashews. Most definitely. If you're going to be sitting there nibbling, you may as well nibble on good stuff. I hear you, Miss Kate. Oh, yeah, and doggy snacks, because you don't want the doggies to start looking at you as, are you a doggy snack? Every once in a while, I'm concerned when Bubba comes up and starts licking my foot. It's like, oh, dude, seriously, are you taste testing or something? I don't want to know. I don't want to know. Oh, well. I saw it earlier today, or earlier, just before, what you just share, Grim, from Minds. The Amazon is burning. Oh, my God, all those people who won't get their packages. That's about how intelligent... We'll just move along from there, won't we? Yes, we shall. Where do I want to go first? Where do I want to go first? I think I will go with some musings. Some musings from markmason.net. He's the writer of I think the name of the book is Everything is Fucked. Let me scroll down, cuz I think it's part of his biography at the bottom. Dun dun dun. Okay, I'll just move along. So, I saw this in my pocket, as you know, when you're exploring your pocket, and I went, oh, I like that headline. And I have read some Mark Mason stuff before, so I think I'll just go there and check this one out. Now, it says it's a 9-minute read, but y'all know that I don't do 9-minute reads. It's probably going to take me a half hour, because I got to insert my own commentary. So, that this is called Stop Trying to Change Yourself. You know, unless it's your diaper. You might need to do that. But if you can change your own diaper, then you can get off your ass and get into the bathroom, too. So, you can't change yourself, so don't even try. I know that's not what the infomercials and self-help seminars tell you, but fuck it, they're wrong. You can't change. Like a thirsty man in the desert chasing a mirage, or a fat man peering into an empty fridge. There's nothing there, so stop chasing it. Go do something else instead. So why can't you change yourself? Well, because the whole idea of change is an arbitrary construct. It's something that you just made up to make yourself feel good or bad. So, yesterday I hadn't written this article. Today I have. Did I change? I don't know. Did you? Both yes and no are the correct answers, depending on how I define change. Now, technically, you are both always changing and never changing. It just depends on how you look at it. So what you decide is change is not necessary, or is not an imaginary line you draw in your head. Now, I could decide that changing myself means having $1 billion. I'll then sit around beating myself up for not being able to change for the rest of my life. Therefore, that's not a very useful definition of change. You know, like the Hopi McChange shit that we got for 8 years because people actually went, a change you can believe in. Really? There's a lie in the middle of every believing, in every belife. B-E-L-I-E-F. Or I could decide that changing myself means not putting ketchup on my fries. If that's the case, then change is pretty damn easy. But does my definition of change mean anything? Well, not really. So what is change? When people lay around whining to their therapist and ex-wives that they're finally going to change themselves, they're promising something imaginary and made up. If they used to lie and now they've stopped lying, have they changed? Or are they permanently and irrevocably fixed? Will they never lie again? And even if they don't, will it matter? Please tell us. Millions of pissed off ex-wives would love to know. Now, we don't know what change is because we don't know what the hell we are. If I wake up tomorrow and do the exact opposite of everything I do today, am I a changed person? Or am I simply the same person who decided to try something different? And more importantly, who fucking cares? I don't, and neither should you. So here's the problem with using the word change. It gets your identity involved. And when you get your identity involved, you become really emotionally attached to imaginary things. You throw fits and beat yourself up and blame others and decide that you are, in fact, a worthless piece of shit who has no hope in this world. It's one thing to say, I want to start going to the gym every week. It's another thing to say, it's time I finally change and become the type of person who goes to the gym each week. Well, what type of person goes to the gym each week? I have a certain definition of people like that. What's yours? Can we define change? I don't think so. Now, the first statement is simple. You want to go to the gym, so you go or not. The second statement implies that to go to the gym, you must completely reinvent yourself. And that raises the emotional stakes massively. Now, if you succeed, spoiler, you probably won't, but you'll gain this blissful feeling of being a new person, which will last until the next time you feel crappy and want to change again. And if you fail, you'll chastise yourself for your irredeemable sloth. And that's the problem with getting your identity involved. If and when you fail at something, you start thinking, maybe I'm kidding myself. Maybe I'm not one of those gym people. Maybe this just isn't me. So why even try? Well, because you've decided these arbitrary actions represent the totality of your character. And you will view your failure to get off your ass and put on yoga pants, which, trust me, ladies, there are some of you out there that really should not go anywhere near that rack in the clothing store. Or that department on Amazon. Seriously, trust me on this one. Nobody wants to see the craters of the moon walking down the street. There's that mental image shit again. Okay, back to this. So, yeah, putting on yoga pants as a verdict of your value as a human being. You will hate yourself, and you will be less motivated to, quote-unquote, change or do anything else in the future. Now, on the flip side, if you succeed, like all drugs, you'll get this nice high and momentarily escape your sense of yourself. But soon, that high will wear off. And you'll need to define for yourself a new type of change to accomplish. And you'll pursue that. You'll then become addicted to personal change. The same way that Eric Clapton was addicted to cocaine. Or Edgar Allan Poe was addicted to drinking until he passed out face down in a ditch. So here's a pro tip. There's no such thing as a gym person. There are just people who go to the gym. Similarly, there is no such thing as a productive person. There are just people who do productive things fairly often. And there's no such thing as a lovable person. There are just some people who aren't selfish twats. Excuse me. I like that sentence right there. I'm going to have to remember that one. I may have to have my daughter make a t-shirt of that. There's no such thing as a lovable person. There are just people who aren't selfish twats. I think that would fit nicely on a t-shirt. Now, also remember, it's not always about you. And in fact, it rarely is. And I do have this book. In The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, I wrote about the importance of maintaining an identity that is defined by as little as possible. That's because when we get our identities involved, when we decide that certain behaviors or events represent our worth as a human being, things get emotionally turbulent. And when things get emotionally turbulent, we tend to do really dumb shit. So instead, think of your life merely as a long sequence of actions and decisions. And if you're like most people, many of these actions and decisions are suboptimal. Suboptimal. I've made some of those. And what most of us mean when we say we'd like to change ourselves is simply that we'd like to make slightly more optimal actions and decisions. Slightly more, because, you know, you got to have some fun along the way. Now, for years, I hated mornings. Well, pretty much my entire life, I woke up late. This would cause a little snowball of shittiness in my life. I'd be behind on work all day, so then I'd have to stay up half the night working. Then I'd be tired and stressed out the next day. So I'd stay up even later the next night trying to catch up. And by the end of the week, I'd be a wreck. So to escape, I'd go out drinking and partying to unwind way too much, which would just fuck me up with even further the next week. I still somehow managed to build a career, don't ask me how, other than the small truckload of caffeine. But instead of recognizing that I did okay despite my bad habits, I made it about me. I made it part of who I was. And I decided it was my identity. I said, yeah, I'm a badass. Fuck waking up early. Fuck getting to sleep. I don't need that shit. Look at me, Mom. I can work all night. Okay, I can't. This is me talking. I can't. Not no more. I got a bedtime. So, he goes on to say, and... excuse me, you can get away with that when you're 22, but you can't when you're 32. Oh, honey, 32 ain't nothing. I can still do that at 32. It's now that I have trouble with that shit. So, in his 30s, he began to struggle with productivity. And instead of recognizing his terrible habits, he told himself, well, I'm just not a morning person, or I don't do that sort of morning routine stuff. Without me realizing it, this was a tantamount to me giving up before I started. The times I'd tried to get up early, or to work out first thing, or to eat a healthy breakfast, I'd struggle and immediately tell myself, see, this morning stuff isn't for me. And I do have to say, I know there's a lot of people out there, and I know there's a lot of medical people that say, breakfast is the most important meal of the day, and you should eat it within such and such time of you waking up. I'm not hungry then. I'm really not. I'm usually not hungry until about 2 or 3 hours after I've been up and motivating around a bit. That's just the way my body works. I have tried to do that morning thing where you get up and you eat some breakfast first thing, and you know what? It makes me frickin' groggy. It really does, because I get food in my tummy, and it doesn't even have to be a whole heck of a lot, and I'm thinking it's siesta time. But getting back to this, eventually he had to get over himself. He goes on to say, I had to decide that, you know what? I don't know who the hell I am or what I'm doing, but I do know that historically and scientifically and anecdotally, and anyone who is not an idiot knows, that waking up early and starting the day off with a nice, simple routine is a healthy and productive way to live one's life. For most people. And so he did. I removed my identity from it and just did it because it's a good thing to do. Now I get up early and I meditate, usually, and eat something greenish and healthy and bang out a bunch of writing as soon as I possibly can. And does that make me a morning person? Does it make me a productive person? Who knows and who cares? Because I don't. And it was not by not caring that made it possible for me to do it. Keep yourself out of your decisions, because most likely it's not about you. Simply ask yourself, is it a good thing to do? If yes, then go do it. Oh, you failed to do it? Is it still a good thing to do? Yes, then go do it again. And if at any point you realize that it wasn't as good as you thought, then don't do it again. End of story. So now, we get on to changing your actions and not yourself. Because that's really where you can affect change. Most of us who feel stuck in certain habits are stuck because we're emotionally embedded in unhealthy behaviors. A smoker doesn't just smoke cigarettes. They develop a whole identity around smoking. It alters their social life, their eating and sleeping habits, how they see themselves and others. They become the smoker to their friends and family. They develop a relationship with cigarettes the same way that you and I develop a relationship with a pet or a favorite toy. I don't have a favorite toy. So, when someone decides to change themselves and quit smoking, they're essentially attempting to change their entire identity. All of the relationships, habits, and assumptions that have gone into X years of doing a singular thing. It's no wonder they fail. Excuse me. The trick to quitting smoking or to changing any habit is to recognize that your identity, that elaborate mental framework that you devised in your mind and labeled as me, doesn't actually exist. It is arbitrary. It is a facade. And it can be raised or dropped at will. You are not a smoker. You are a person who chooses to smoke. You are not a night person. You are a person who chooses to be active at night and sleep through the morning. You are not unproductive. You are a person who currently chooses to do things that do not feel useful. You are not unlovable. You are a person who currently feels unloved. And changing these actions is as simple as changing your actions. One action at a time. Forget labeling it. Forget social accountability. In fact, research has found that sharing goals with others can often backfire. So forget the big hoo-ha about who you are or what you are or what the fucking Pope thinks about you. I don't think the Pope thinks about me, and I don't want to know if he's doing that other thing. Because, yeah, Pope doesn't think about you. And neither do most of the rest of us. And neither do you, for that matter. Your identity is this made-up thing that you're emotionally attached to. It's a mirage in the desert. A ketchup bottle in an otherwise empty fridge. And it's the quickest way to change yourself is to realize that there's no real self to change. So, he also says he's written a 21-page ebook about three ideas that have heavily influenced his life. So, thank you, Mark Mason. You know, the only changing that I do is my opinions and my clothes. I change my clothes. There you go, Grammy. Your meditation in the morning is just stay asleep. See, I can't sleep in. That's just one of those things. I have an internal alarm clock that gets me up no later than 8 in the morning. I have actually slept in till 8 o'clock like 3 times in the last month. And basically that's because I let the doggies out at 11:30 at night because that's how late I stayed up. But normally I'm up around 6:30 in the morning. And most of the time, if I'm not up by 6:30 in the morning, I have two doggies that are letting me know, it's time to get your ass up, because we need to pee or poop, and yeah, you better let us out or we're going to do it on the carpet. Just saying. That's pretty much my alarm clock, is my doggies. So, excuse me. Hiya, Sock Puppet, how you doing? Okay, do I want to go? I got a couple more here I have brought up. Do I want to do... Okay, you know what? We're talking about coffee. We're talking about first thing in the morning. Let's just go to the Babylon Bee. Just because Grammy got me started on this website, and it's one of my faves, I just got to say. Now, according to the Babylon Bee, a study finds that most sin is a direct result of not having enough coffee in your system. I believe this. I will actually even say believe, not be live. I believe. Ami, 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 and everything. Apparently, a new study has shown what coffee drinkers have long known to be true. A lack of coffee directly increases the sinfulness of your thoughts, attitudes, emotions, and desires. For instance, you're much more likely to want to punch somebody in the face before you've had that sweet, sweet nectar from heaven, said lead researcher Dr. Bob Anthony Anderson. As you consume more and more coffee, the chances that you'll flip somebody off, snap at your kids, or tell somebody that you wish they were dead decreases dramatically. Now, according to researchers, once you've had about 2 gallons of coffee for the day, you approach near-perfect levels of sanctification, nearing the righteousness of Tim Tebow, Kirk Cameron, and John Piper. Before you start drinking coffee, you pretty much Satan incarnate, which, yeah, there are some mornings that you get in my way before I've had my swig of the coffee, the morning elixir, and yeah, those horns will pop out, that tail will pop out, and I have a pitchfork close at hand. So, we don't just jump to too many conclusions here, but the research seems clear, said Anderson. You should drink as much coffee as possible if you truly desire to be Christ-like. It's a difficult sacrifice, but if we're willing to be Christian or willing to be serious about our Christian walk, it seems that we should apply the results of this study to our lives and go suck down more delicious pour-overs, cappuccinos, and iced lattes. I don't like iced lattes. I really don't. But, you know, that's whatever floats your boat. I will not drink them. That leaves more for you. So, the Babylon Bee. That one went so fast that I think I will have time to get to my other one. So, I looked up this one just because, well, I went to Mental Floss. I saw something, and then I started reading it, and I went, I don't like this one, and this was a link off to the side. And I thought, I like Mark Twain. Let's check this one out. This is 11 things you might not know about Mark Twain, other than the fact that his name was Samuel Clemens. Now, Mark Twain is widely considered the author of the first great American novel, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, which, get it now, before the political correctness nuts get out there and say, we must burn all of those books because they say bad words in them. Honey, you need to have that in order to measure, to have a gauge as to how far you've come, but they don't want to hear common sense stuff, so... Huckleberry Finn is his rollicking tale, His rollicking tales aren't only legacy that he left behind. His poignant quotes and witticisms have been told and retold, sometimes erroneously, over the last century and a half, and his volume of work speaks for itself. Now, over the course of his legendary career, Twain, whose real name was Samuel Langhorne Clemens, wrote more than a dozen novels, plus countless short stories and essays, and still found time to invent new products, hang out with famous scientists, and look after a house full of cats. Today, and this was written today is the 183rd anniversary of Twain's birth in Florida, Missouri. And they've compiled a list of things that you might not know about the famous humorist, satirist, and storyteller. So, number one, Mark Twain is a nautical reference. Like many of history's literary greats, Mark Twain decided to assume an alias early in his writing career. He tried out a few different names, like Thomas Jefferson Snodgrass and Sergeant Fathom, and more plainly, Josh, before settling on Mark Twain. which means 2 fathoms or 12 feet deep in boating jargon. He got the idea while working as a steamboat pilot on the Mississippi River, a job he held for 4 years until the Civil War broke out in 1861, putting a halt to commerce. However, another popular theory holds that he earned the nickname in a bar. According to reports in a couple of 19th century newspapers, he'd walk into a pub and call out, "Mark Twain!" Kind of like Marco Polo, prompting the bartender to take a piece of chalk and make 2 marks on the wall for Twain. 2 drinks. Twain denied this version of events, though. The second one is, in addition to being a steamboat pilot, Mark Twain also worked as a miner. Shortly after his stint on the Big Muddy, Twain headed west with his brother to avoid having to fight the war. He took up work as a miner in Virginia City, Nevada, but the job wasn't for him. He described it as hard and long and dismal. Fortunately for Twain, he didn't have to work there long. In 1862, he was offered his first writing job for Virginia City's Territorial Enterprise newspaper, where he covered crime, politics, mining, and culture. Now, number 3 is a story Mark Twain heard in a bar led to his big break. In 1864, Twain headed to Calaveras County, California, in hopes of striking gold as a prospector, which he didn't. However, well, actually, he did. He prospected ideas. However, it was during this time that he heard the bartender of the Angels Hotel in Angels Camp share an incredulous story about a frog jumping contest. Now, Twain recounted the tale in his own words in The Celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County. It was published in 1865 in the New York Saturday Press and went on to receive national acclaim. Number 4, it took Mark Twain 7 years to write The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. That doesn't really surprise me much. He started writing the sequel to The Adventures of Tom Sawyer in 1876, but he wasn't too pleased with his progress. After writing about 400 pages, he told a friend he liked it only tolerably well, as far as I have got, and may possibly pigeonhole or burn the manuscript. He put the project on a back burner for several years and finally finished it in 1883, following a burst of inspiration. Number 5. Mark Twain invented a board game. Wow, cool, I did not know this one. While Twain was putting off writing The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, he was busy working on a game he dubbed Memory Builder. It was originally supposed to be an outdoor game to help children learn about England's monarchs, but he ended up turning it into a board game to improve its chances of selling. However, after 2 years of work, it was still too convoluted to be marketable and required a vast knowledge, of historical facts and dates. But that didn't stop him from patenting the game. I wonder if that's what turned out being Trivial Pursuit. Never know. Number 6, Mark Twain created improved scrapbooks and suspenders. Memory Builder wasn't Mark Twain's only invention. He also patented 2 other products. One was inspired by his love of scrapbooking, while the other came about from his hatred of suspenders. He designed a self-adhesive scrapbook that works like an envelope, which netted him about $50,000 in profits. Now, $50,000 back in the day was a boatload of money. Just saying. His improvement in adjustable and detachable straps for garters also ended up being useful, but for an entirely different purpose than Twain originally intended. According to The Atlantic, this clever invention only caught on for 1 snug garment, the bra. For those with little brassiere experience, not a button or a snap, but a clasp is all that secures that elastic band, which holds up women's breasts. So, not so dexterous, ladies and gentlemen, you can thank Mark Twain for that. Thank you, Mark Twain, but I don't do that anymore. Number 7, Thomas Edison filmed Mark Twain at home. Only one video of Twain exists, and it was shot by none other than his close friend Thomas Edison. The footage was captured in 1909, 1 year before the author died, and at Twain's estate in Redding, Connecticut. He's seen sporting a light-colored suit and his usual walrus mustache, and one scene shows him with his daughters Clara and Jean. On a separate occasion that same year, Edison recorded Twain as he read stories into a phonograph, but those audio clips were destroyed in a fire. No other recordings of Twain's voice exist. That sucks. So, and number 8. Mark Twain did not, or did wear, white suits, but not as often as you might think. So when you think of Mark Twain, you probably picture him in an all-white suit, which I do, with a cigar or pipe hanging from his lips. And it's true that he was photographed in a white suit on several occasions, but he didn't start this habit until later in life. According to the Mark Twain Boyhood Home and Museum, in December 1906, he wore a white suit while appearing before a congressional committee regarding copyright. He did this for dramatic emphasis. Several times after that, he wore white out of season for effect. He also refused to trade his white clothes for shapeless and degrading black ones in the winter, no matter how cold it got. So take that, people who subscribe to that whole no white after Labor Day rule, which that no white after Labor Day rule, I didn't even hear about that rule until I was in my 30s. And then it was like, I don't wear white pants anyway. Are you kidding me? Jeez. Number 9. At one point, Mark Twain had 19 cats. Oh my goodness, it's no wonder my Auntie Wanda loved him. He really, really liked cats. So much so that he had 19 of them at one time. And as he was traveling, he would rent cats to keep him company. In fact, he had a much higher opinion of felines than humans, remarking that if man could be crossed with the cat, it would improve man, but it would deteriorate the cat. He also had a talent for coming up with great cat names like Beelzebub and Blathskite and Buffalo Bill and Sour Mash and Zorro Roaster and Soapy Sal and Pestilence and Bambino and Satan. I had a friend that had a cat named Satan. That was a wild kitty too. Number 10. Mark Twain probably didn't say that thing that you think he said. Now, Twain is one of the most misquoted authors in history. And according to one quote wrongfully attributed to him, it's better to keep your mouth shut and appear stupid than to open it and remove all doubt. What Twain actually said was, he was endowed with a stupidity which by the least little stretch would go around the globe 4 times and tie. There are many, many, many examples of these. And finally, number 11, Mark Twain accurately predicted when he would die. When he was born on November 30th, 1835, Halley's Comet was visible from Earth. It appears roughly every 75 years, and Twain predicted he would die the next time it graced the sky. As he put it in 1909, I came in with Halley's Comet in 1835, and it's coming again next year, and I expect to go out with it. It will be the greatest disappointment of my life if I don't go out with Halley's Comet. The Almighty has said, no doubt. Now, here are these two unaccountable freaks. They came in together, and they must go out together. Oh, I'm looking forward to that. He ended up passing away at his Connecticut home on April 21st, 1910, 1 day after Halley's Comet appeared in the sky once again. I did not know that. Interesting. You know, I keep seeing these things on Twitter and on Facebook about if you had 1 hour and a picnic bench, who would you sit and chat with and why? And my choice would be Samuel Clemens. Just from his writing, he sounds like he was one hell of a fun guy to talk to. So, I think I could spend an hour jibber-jabbering with Mark Twain, a.k.a. Samuel Clemens. Now, it's getting to that time. I probably ought to go and check out the pig, see what's going on over on PIGazette.com, where those crazy Hambo and Porcus loiter around. Their word of the day today is Barney Fife. Usually, the idiot son of a high-ranking official, this zealously inept officer is a fixture on every small-town police force from sea to shining sea. Doesn't necessarily have to be a small-town police force either. Just saying. In their quotable quotes section, legal insurrection headline, New York Times newsroom infested with bedbugs. Hambo. Now, that's funny. I don't care who you are. That is true, Hambo. That is funny. That is funny. So, this date in history. August the 28th, 1904, in Newport, Rhode Island, first-to-jail motorist for speeding exceeded the 15-mile-per-hour limit. My car doesn't even idle that slow. What the hell? This date in history, the 28th of August, 1907, two teenage capitalists team up to demonstrate why America is the land of opportunity. Start American Messenger Company, a little gem you know as United Parcel Service, UPS. Wow, the Brown's been along for quite a while. And finally, this date in history, the 28th of August, 1938, Charlie McCarthy is first dummy to get an honorary degree after the 60s radicals infest Ivory Tower faculties, giving degrees to dummies, stops being newsworthy. And, yeah, well, Joe Biden was the first dummy to be a VP. Because Walter is obviously the smarter brother of those two. Oh, you didn't know Walter, Jeff Dunham's dummy, is Joe Biden's long-lost twin? He is. You can see the resemblance. It's there. It's there. Oh, well, dang, it's almost time. Do I have anything else? Do you guys have anything else funny here? In their tasty tidbits. How do you file tax returns? How do you cook yourself dinner? UC Berkeley's newest class, Adulting, is answering those questions. The very hashtag-friendly course aims to address blind spots in the education of America's youth. Skills once considered to be common sense are now the focal point of this new class. Holy crap, if that is not a demonstration of how bass-ackwards this public education system is, I don't know what is. Things that, you know, like how to cook yourself dinner, things that you should have learned, you know, during your early years, like early in your tweens, up to your teens before you got booted out of the house, you now have to learn in college? What the hell? Parents, seriously, you dropped the ball, especially if you expect public education to teach this stuff. Yoinks. Oh, well. Y'all been listening to Grammy's Rocket Chair here on this wacka 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 wackadoodle Wednesday. Thank you ever so much for tuning in. Let's go see what's going on the rest of the week here on the RLM. Tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, Flash, somebody's going to be jumping on the radio with 20% off. Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, or it's a nooner for Vinny since he's Central Time, is the Ponder Gander. I'm not sure if he's going to be on or not, but hey, I'm going to announce it anyway. Friday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, will be the last rocket chair for a while. I'm thinking probably after the first of the year. Just putting that out there so you know. It's not just taking a couple of weeks hiatus or anything. Probably after the first of the year. I got to compact my defecation. You know what I mean? Vern? And I got lots of things going on, in any case. But I will be back on Friday for the Freaker Friday edition of the Rocket Chair. Then on Saturday at noon Eastern Time will be the Dork Table with Flasharoonie Dork and whoever else he can con into joining him. I will be on my way to Denver with my daughter, so I will not be playing along on Saturday. But I hope you guys have a wonderful time. On Sunday at noon Eastern Time, Grimner's going to be hopping on the radio to play some blues for y'all, and I'm sure there will be a rousing game of trivia going on in the chit chat. Then directly following Grim will be Hal Anthony, who's going to open up a can of whoop ass on yo ass behind the woodshed. Then Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Grim's going to be jumping on the radio again to feed you some mental leftovers. Yummy, yummy good stuff. And, yeah, be sure to check it out, because Grimmy's always got something very vital to say. Also, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, the Ocelli Effect on Channel 14 here on the RLM. Oops, I forgot as well. Thursday, sorry, Poopster and Prince, Thursday, this coming, tomorrow, actually, the Power Hour with Poopster and Prince. At 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Interesting show. I got to listen to the podcast from last week. Interesting show. I look forward to listening to it again. Thank you, gents. Also, Tuesday morning at 2 a.m. Eastern Time in A Poifect World with Flasharoonie. And maybe Vinny, although I doubt it. Vinny's going to stay up that late. So that's the RLM schedule coming up. Y'all have an absolutely amazing rest of your wackadoodle Wednesday. And please remember, I truly do love you all. And I wish you all enough. Good night.